Should changes be made to Cincinnati's Connected Communities zoning reform? A city council majority approved the plan last year, but residents have been meeting over the past several months to develop recommendations to address their concerns. You're tuned to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Joining me now to talk about those recommendations are Cincinnati Vice Mayor Jan Michelle Lemon Kearney. Welcome back, Vice Mayor Kearney.
Thank you, Lucy May. I'm just loving being in this new studio. This
is so fancy,
beautiful.
Isn't it?
Yeah. Yes.
Very beautiful. Thank you. And Greater Cincinnati Homeless Coalition Executive Director Josh Spring. Thanks for being here, Josh.
Thank you.
Vice Mayor, you voted against Connected Communities last year. Explain briefly why.
So let me just start by saying making Connected Communities better is not something that's against Connected Communities. I did vote against it, not because I didn't think there were a lot of good ideas in it, and I love the idea of more density in our business districts and around our transit corridors. It's just that there was a lot of community concern, and so I felt, you know, I used the steak example. It felt like Connected Communities was like a steak that wasn't quite ready, and so I voted no. But given all the concerns that community members had, some were for Connected Communities, some were against Connected Communities, but they had concerns in at least five different areas, which I'll name. And so Councilmember Scotty Johnson and President Pro Tem Victoria Parks and I said, let's just get folks together and say, here are some issues that you brought up during the debate about Connected Communities, and let's see how some of these concerns can be addressed to make it better.
You mentioned Making Connected Communities Better, which is this group, and you mentioned these focus areas. Talk about those committees that were formed as part of the Making Connected Communities Better group, and you know why the groups were, why the issues were broken into the those.
Right.
Segments.
So, those segments. So we listened really carefully to all of the public comment and looked at the hundreds, I mean, literally hundreds of emails that came in. And we came up with four groups, really five eventually. But we started and we looked at what people were saying they wanted to still see addressed. Accessibility was one of them. Affordable housing was another. Infrastructure was another one. Environment was another one. And then also neighborhood look and feel. So those are the five that we have. Accessibility, I should mention, is something we added later because several people in the Human Services Chamber said, you know, you really haven't addressed accessibility. And even though that was not a big issue during the discussion, we said, let's go ahead and put that in. That's really important. What we didn't include was community engagement, because the planning department at that point was putting out their draft of the community engagement ordinance. So we said, that's already being done. Let's take a look at that and talk about it separately. So that's why we have these five working groups, we call them.
You mentioned neighborhood look and feel, and one of the biggest criticisms of Connected Communities last year that we heard on our program was the concern that it gives developers kind of carte blanche to do what they want, regardless of whether the development fits the scale or character of the neighborhoods. Is that the group that was designed to kind of address those concerns?
Right. So I should say that. And let me just mention all the co-chairs. So accessibility was Kelly Blackshear and Dee Henry. Affordable housing is Josh Spring, who's right here, and Kelly Hibbett. Environment was Larry Falcon, who used to be head of our Office of Environmental Sustainability Department, and Sue Bills. Infrastructure, Carol Gibbs and Brian Spittler. And then neighborhood look and feel, which is where we are in this discussion, Beth Johnson, who's with the Cincinnati Preservation Association, and Dawn Johnson, who's actually president of NANA. So neighborhood look and feel, a lot of people complained that they were afraid of losing the character of their neighborhood, that they moved to North Avenue, for example, because they liked the way the homes look, they liked the neighborhood look and feel. And so what would happen if we said you can just, you know, do what you want with density, you can put a multifamily, one of those square multifamily homes in the middle of your older homes, and would that ruin your neighborhood look and feel? And so people were concerned about that. So Beth Johnson and Dawn did just a fantastic job, as all of our, and everybody was a volunteer. We tell people, whoever's interested, sign up. And so these are just like, you know, hundreds of people who just signed up. And but they did a great job. One of the recommendations was to have pattern books for every neighborhood. And so there are some architects who are on that committee that said they would volunteer to do a few neighborhoods. And then the neighborhoods could say, yes, these are the patterns we want. It makes the permit process easier. Like, these are the patterns you can choose from. They're automatically approved. And so that's something else we could do. There's also an old ordinance that I didn't know about that was called the Neighborhood Character Conservation District Ordinance, C ZC 1436, if anyone knows about that. I think it's from 2018. Mm-hmm. It never went for a vote, but it kind of had a similar idea as the urban design overlay districts that we do for business districts, but this would be for residential. So they said, let's dust that one off and take a look at it and mm-hmm. see if that's something we can do as well. But I love the pattern book idea. I think that's very creative.
Yeah. Josh, you chaired the group making recommendations about affordable housing. What do you think Connected Communities gets right about housing, and what do you think it gets wrong?
Yeah. So as it pertains to affordable housing, and when we see affordable, we mean that you're paying no more than 30% of your monthly income in housing. And there's about 46,000 of our households that can't afford the home they have today. Connected Communities, the one thing as it stands today that it did for affordable housing is it allowed more flexibility for folks that are developing with low-income housing tax credits. So it allowed more density. It allowed to build one story higher. But our concern was that outside of that, Connected Communities in lots of areas of our city gives developers the ability to build in far greater density than they could before, which inherently increases the value of what they can build. So we took just an example plot in Bond Hill and said that's vacant today and said, well, with Connected Communities, what could you do? And it increased the potential income by about quadruple, about $500,000 more a year.
Sure.
And
so the more places you have to rent out, the more rent you're collecting.
The more you can make. And so we say, well, some of that value needs to stay in the neighborhood, stay in the community. And the best way to do that is in affordable housing. So you require that affordable housing is a part of the development.
I think, you know, you mentioned the density, and I think some people might look at that and say, hey, there will be more places to rent, so won't that naturally lower prices for rental places? What do you think about that?
Yeah, so, and that is, for the proponents of Connected Communities as it was written, and folks that have pushed this kind of thing across the country, that's their argument, a supply and demand argument. If we increase the supply and meet the demand, the prices go down across the board. But that's not how it works with housing. Maybe it works that way with eggs and bread, but not with housing. And truly, we don't, the invisible hand does not create affordable housing unless we force it to.
Let me add to that. So, you know, that's called up housing. First of all, we need more housing at all income levels. So that's a given. But if we're talking about affordable housing for people who are really out there struggling, I think it's that 60% AMI, people making like $65,000 and lower with a family of four. That's really the huge need. And so what happens when you increase supply of expensive housing, it might decrease the price for those who are at the top. But those who are in that 60% AMI and lower still cannot afford those rents. And so it doesn't make them low enough for people who really need them. There was a show on NPR several months ago that talked about how Minneapolis at first did a kind of a, you know, well, they outlawed single family zoning everywhere. So we didn't do that, but just in our business districts, for example. But what they said was when they, at first, they did not have inclusionary zoning, meaning there was no mandatory affordable housing. And then later they added it. And since they added it, they've actually gotten a lot more. My understanding is that Columbus has a similar affordable housing law that that Josh is talking about, where Mayor Ginther said affordable housing has to be included in some areas that already have a lot in higher income areas, I think is really what he did. And so we're gonna look at Minneapolis and Columbus to see how their laws were implemented and whether or not they've actually helped with affordable housing. It sounds like they have, but mm-hmm. we need to gather more data about that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. We're talking about proposed changes to Cincinnati's Connected Communities Zoning Plan. Do you have questions or comments? You can give us a call at 513-419-7100 or email talk@wvxu.org. We did get an email from Steve from Oakley who writes, last year when Connected Communities was passed, critics said the measure was being rushed. More time was needed for input from citizens and discussion. It was passed under council emergency rules with the insulating value that provides. Isn't the fact that several working groups looking for improvements is basically a de facto admission that it was rushed and the critics were correct? That's Steve's question. We just have a little less than a minute before we need to break, Vice Mayor, but what do you think about that?
No, Steve, I hear you, but no, I don't think it's an admission of anything. And, you know, and I want to make sure that people don't think that we are going against connected communities, although people have different viewpoints in our working groups. You know, all we're saying is that as things go forward, there's still some concerns that we can't address, and they can be addressed now. So even though connected communities is in place, obviously it's not stopping us from addressing environmental concerns, infrastructure concerns, affordable housing concerns. We can still do that.
Okay. Well, we are going to continue our discussion after a short break, and later in the program, we'll talk about the barriers to reentering the workforce after incarceration and how they differ for people convicted of white-collar crimes. This is Cincinnati Edition. This is Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. We're talking about citizen recommendations to change Cincinnati's Connected Communities Zoning Plan. My guests are Cincinnati Vice Mayor Jan Michelle Lemon Kearney and Greater Cincinnati Homeless Coalition Executive Director Josh Spring. You can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100, or you can email talk at wvxu.org. Josh, before the break, we were talking about affordable housing. What are some of the recommendations your group is making when it comes to affordable housing?
Sure. So we are saying that anywhere in the connected communities legislation that it grants developers increased density, that in those instances, affordable housing has to be included. And it's important to note that this isn't anything unique. There are more than 400 municipalities across the country that when they allow greater density, they require affordable housing. So we would just be doing what so much other places in the country do. So we are recommending that at least 20% of the homes in such a property are affordable at 50% of the median or lower. And so that is for households with an income of around $50,000 a year or less. And then of those affordable homes, that at least 30% of them be affordable at 30% of the median or lower, so about $30,000 a year or less. And it's important for folks to know the reason that we hone in at 50% AMI and 30% AMI is because 84% of households in our community, more than three quarters of households in our community that cannot afford their home today, have an income of about $50,000 a year or less. And so that's clearly where the need is.
And Vice Mayor Kearney, what do you think of those recommendations? Do you think a council majority would support that kind of change?
So we're not there yet. So here we are with all of our recommendations. What I'm asking the working groups to do, because there's so many recommendations, is to come up with the top ones that they really want us to start looking at, and then discuss them with our legal department. So the other thing is, as I said about affordable housing and inclusionary zoning, is that there are other cities. I don't know if Josh mentioned yet that there. He told us that there are 411 communities across the country that have similar ordinances. So let's look at some, especially Minneapolis and Columbus, because Connected Communities is connected to Minneapolis with a lot of ideas. And then Columbus is, you know, always right there, someone that, you know, we don't want developers to go there. We want them to come here to Cincinnati. So we have to look and see, is this working there? How is it working? What improvements has it made? And so we need more data on that. And then, of course, everything has to go through our legal department to see if we're doing it correctly. Mm-hmm. So we're not there with endorsing or not endorsing any of these recommendations yet, but looking at them and seeing which ones we can shepherd through.
Yeah. Vice Mayor, work groups were focused on other aspects of connected communities too. You mentioned the environmental work group, for example, and I know there was concern about the displacement of trees. Did you hear a lot about that from residents? What were some of those top environmental recommendations?
Yeah, the environmental group, you know, led by Larry Falcon, and you know, who's just an expert in this area, and Sue Bills, who just works all over the place. She's just great. They had 11 recommendations, but the one about the trees, they wanted Senate to adopt a tree protection ordinance that required curb strips with trees and grass. It requires replacement of any removed trees on a site through a tree bank. They want to protect heritage trees. Those are our large native trees. And they wanted to do adopt trees in parking lots. There's a white paper that's called Trees in Parking Lots. So they wanted to adopt that white paper. So they had that, those kinds of recommendations. In terms of climate protection, they talked about electrifying everything and incentivizing solar installations, promoting energy efficiency, and also replacing gas lights. People love their gas light districts, but there are other lights that are, low in terms of lighting, but are much better for the environment than gas lights. So they did a lot of really good recommendations like that. They also talked about stormwater overflow, noise and light pollution. I mean, they had and illegal dumping and littering. They had recommendations for just about everything. I mean, they were amazing. I should say the infrastructure group looked at a lot of these issues too. Environment kind of jumped ahead and got a lot more recommendations. And so infrastructure said, okay, since you guys are doing that, we're going to look at internet access. So they had recommendations on that. So there's a lot going on.
Yeah, there really is. Well, and another recommendation was to increase the budget for code enforcement. Can you talk a little bit about that one? Because I think that relates to housing concerns too.
Right. So, and actually we did increase the budget for code enforcement because that's really important. Also, what I really, really like about our building and inspections department is that we have an internship program so that we can get more people from the communities as building inspectors. And that helps with code enforcement too, because a lot of people complained that they didn't see people who look like them coming to their buildings and their homes looking at these codes. And so I think that's very important. And so that also brings more jobs to the city. They just had their first graduation of the first group, I think a week or two ago.
Oh.
So,
Josh, do you think increased code enforcement maybe could help people who end up living in substandard housing because that's the housing that they can afford?
So I think it can if it's done carefully and strategically. So historically, there have been major issues in our city and cities across the country with code enforcement, particularly focusing on owners who are Black, focusing on owners who have less income, and in some cases, driving people out of their homes or their properties. But it certainly doesn't have to be that way. So we have organized with thousands of tenants in a variety of buildings where we've been able to partner with the city's code enforcement employees and work hand in hand. Tenants work together. And it really takes that kind of relationship where it's not just somebody randomly showing up and, checking boxes, but an actual relationship. And with that, it can be very productive at dealing with some very bad landlords. We have some, especially out-of-town folks, not only out of town, but especially, that are soaking up rent dollars while the places just fall down around Cincinnatians' heads.
Another thing, Lucy May, I just want to mention for low and moderate income homeowners, we want to increase home ownership in Cincinnati. We definitely want people who have a home to keep it. And so code enforcement helps one to keep up their home and make sure that neighborhood homes are safe, but it can be expensive. So Cincinnati has the Harbor Fund, and that is where when you have a code violation, there are funds available in the city and also organizations like People Working Cooperatively and Habitat for Humanity who can, at a good cost, make these repairs for you. So we're really excited about that, for people to know about it. Also, we have the Emergency Home Repair Program, which helps our low and moderate income owners as well. And that's whether you have a code enforcement, a code violation or not, that's there to help you. And people are always surprised to know that we have funds to help with that.
We certainly, unfortunately, don't have time to talk about all the recommendations that all these work groups came up with. But yes, but one that I thought was interesting that came out of the accessibility group was to be focused on parking spaces that are accessible for people who use wheelchairs, while also balancing the need for electric vehicle charging stations, because those are often placed in bigger parking spaces. So it sounds like, I don't know if you can talk a little bit about that one, Vice Mayor, but it sounds like these groups were very conscientious about working together and making sure their recommendations worked with each other.
Absolutely. The accessibility group, that was Kelly Blackshear and Dee Henry and their team, they had a lot of recommendations. They talked about, I mean, some things, just before I mentioned parking, they talked about how public meetings should be at accessible locations, and they should be accessible by Metro. They also should provide ASL and ESL services, which we did at our town hall, mm-hmm. with the ASL services, so that people who are hard of hearing, and there was sign language for them. They also talked about how ordinances should be in alternative formats. They should be digital. There should be a glossary. They should be in plain language so that everyone can understand them. They talked about right to reasonable accommodations during the appeals process in the Connected Communities Ordinance. And they talked about universal design of housing, that whenever we have housing, it should have universal mm-hmm. design, looking at wider hallways and doorways and the way that people can get around, so that even if you're in a wheelchair, you're able to do that, just like we have curb cuts and sidewalks. They talked about signage as well. In terms of parking, they recommended to update the accessibility standards for accessible parking spots in accordance with the ADA, to look at electrical vehicle charging stations and parking. So they had a lot of recommendations in that area as well.
Yeah. What's next with these recommendations, Vice Mayor? Will there be specific ordinances written up that relate to some of these recommendations?
Right. So what's next, and this is going on now, is that the groups are looking at what they want to bring forward first. And I said, look at low-hanging fruit. Look at the things that might be easiest to pass, easiest to get support for in the beginning. And then, as I said, you know, let's collect data, make sure we have the research done, and shepherd them through legal to make sure they're okay. You know, the legal department needs to actually look at everything. Already, our planning department, our Department of Environmental Sustainability, and our city managers, assistant city manager, have looked at these, and so you know, they've gotten some oversight, but. You know, we always have to check with legal, and then we get the ordinances written. And I'm hoping other council members will join in, because I think there are a lot of interests from our other council members in different areas here. Like, I don't have to do it all, right? I said let's share the love, because this is work by the community. And so we just have these wonderful volunteers who have worked on these committees for months since last August, and really done a great job, and we're just grateful for that.
Do you think there will be a council majority to approve some of these, or is it too
absolutely.
Soon to say?
Yeah, absolutely. And so, you know, what I tell people is, you know, when people heard about making connected communities better, they said, oh, you're trying to overturn the ordinance. No, we're not. This is not some kind of, you know, revolution going on. We're just looking at things that people said we still need to address. And even though connected communities pass, it doesn't stop us from looking at things that we still need to address. We talked about the trees. We talked about accessibility, affordable housing, infrastructure, neighborhood look and feel. Those things can still happen, and that's not overturning connected communities. It's just things we need to look at going forward. You know, listening to the community input, I mean, it's amazing how much expertise there is out there that we can really take advantage of to make Cincinnati better. That's really always our goal.
Josh,
move us forward.
Yeah. We don't have a whole lot of time left, about 30 seconds, but are you optimistic?
Yeah. I think each committee has made thoughtful recommendations. I believe we've got facts to back them up. And I hope that the general public stays engaged. It was important that each of our committees, anybody that wanted to be there, was there. And so there were differing opinions that ended at the recommendations that we're bringing to the table.
Yeah, and it sounds like you want to do a little bit more studying on mm-hmm. Minneapolis and Columbus. And
yes.
I bet you've got those places on speed dial, huh, Josh?
Yeah, well, and we looked at the numbers from those 400 different cities. And as it pertains to affordable housing, without these changes, we're confident that connected communities is not positive for affordable housing. But with them, it can create affordable housing in our neighborhoods.
Okay, making it better.
Well, I've been talking with Cincinnati Vice Mayor Jan Michelle Lemon Kearney and Greater Cincinnati Homeless Coalition Executive Director Josh Spring. Thank you both so much for your time
today.
Thank
you, Lucy. I always enjoy your show. I never miss it.
Thank you. Up next, we'll hear how reentry after incarceration is different for people convicted of white-collar crimes. This is Cincinnati Edition.